Yablets!
Some kill, they're leaving it very open. Windbar, well, what a kick! It's a goal!
Look at him go, Mr. Magic, has kicked the most unbelievable goal you have ever seen in a month of Sundays.
Hello, 90s footy fans. Welcome to another week of the 90s Club Footy Podcast. This week, we talk with former Geelong Cat and Melbourne Demon, Clint Bizzle. Clint was drafted by the Cats with pick 75 in the 1995 AFL Draft from Kendron Grange in Queensland. He played 75 games in his six seasons at Cadinia Park before moving to the Melbourne Demons and playing a further 88 games. In this chat, Clint shares how he found out about being drafted, being compared to Gary Ablett, his high-flying marks, being traded to Melbourne, Neil Danaher, and moving from the forward line to the half-back line. I hope you enjoy my chat with the latest member of the 90s Club Footy Podcast, Clint Bizzle. Clint Bizzle, thank you for joining me on the 90s Club Footy Podcast. Great for you to share some time, mate. I'm really looking forward to reflecting on your footy journey.
Good to be with you, Trent. And I've got to say, mate, you look very, very comfortable lying on that bed.
Thanks, mate. Got to be nice and comfortable when I'm talking, that's for sure. Hey, mate, great to have you on. Really looking forward to, as I said, reflecting on your footy journey at the Cats and also the Demons. But as I always do with all my guests, I always ask them, what are you doing with yourself currently? And is there still any footy involvement, post your AFL career?
Yeah, mate, good question. I'm actually working in high performance, so there is some synergy. I'm not working with any particular sporting clubs or even AFL clubs, but I do work in high performance. So I help leaders and teams play at their best through designing and delivering high performance programs in leadership, resilience, culture and the like. So I still kind of feel like I'm in and around that sort of high performance element, which I obviously really enjoyed through my footballing career, but I also had a really deep love for, you know, what makes people tick. So for me, that's always been a big part of my life, and I get to do that now with, you know, large multinational organisations, government, small business, and working with people. I really enjoy working with people.
Let's chat some footy. That's what we're here for. You were born in Brisbane. You're a Queenslander and you were picked up by the Cats in the 1995 AFL National Draft. What are your memories of draft day, and were you expecting to go to the Cats or were you expecting to go to somewhere else?
That's a good question, Trent, because draft day isn't like it is today. It was very different. And my journey, as a young man that sort of missed out on a couple of drafts, I put myself and my name in the draft, but I had already travelled to Adelaide. I was Phil Harper, who I still believe at the Crows. He had involvement in a lot of my junior football and especially at state level. So he said to myself and a couple of other guys, look, why don't you look at coming to Adelaide if you haven't been drafted? And it's like, great, let's go down there. So I was training with Woodville West Torrens for 10 weeks and, you know, working and cleaning the sandstone beautiful houses in and around Adelaide. So the day that it happened, I was too busy. I think it was on the radio, but I didn't have time to listen to it. And I just, you know what, I just thought that it wasn't going to happen again. And, then all of a sudden Phil Harper turns up at the place that I'm working at. And as he's walking towards me, he's got this big kind of grin on his face. And I was like, he goes, guess what? And I just, as soon as he kind of said that, I couldn't quite believe it. I was like, you've got to be kidding. Now, I got spoken to by about four clubs. I think it was, Richmond, North Melbourne, Essendon, and I think the Cats. I can't remember. But anyway, he said, guess who you're playing with? And I just said, all I thought about was Gary Ablett. And I said, Geelong? And he goes, yep. And I just could not believe it. I was just absolutely over the moon. So I quickly just rang my parents, and literally within the next couple of days, I'd flown into Melbourne and then taken the drive down to Geelong, which it was quite a while. I didn't know even where Geelong was, being a Brisbane boy.
Contrasting weather styles too, Biz. Obviously sunshine in Queensland and cold and wintry in Victoria. How did you adjust early?
Horribly. Terribly, mate. I actually had to buy myself some long johns and some thermal, just pretty much say thermal underwear, and I went through quite a lot. So the boy from Brisbane rocking up in sort of shorts and thongs didn't quite cut it, so to speak. And I dare say my clothing style had a lot to answer for as well. It was a very, very different kind of a style as opposed to some of the other, hip-looking Victorians and the like.
Hey, what are your earliest memories of walking through the doors of Geelong? As you said before, you just said Gary Ablett to Phil Harper. Can you recall many of the player interactions you had in the early days? And I'm thinking the names such as Ablett, Couch, Brownless, Buddha Hocking that were running around at that stage.
Yeah, look, they were all the big guns. I mean, Geelong was coming off a grand final. They obviously lost to Carlton, and so there was a lot of big names. But you get into the club, and when you play football, especially from a kid that was watching AFL football all the time, and seeing these guys, are now, locker mates and training. I just remember, I think the first time that I met Gary Ablett Senior, I just remember him sort of walking, I was grabbing a drink, and I decided to just put out my hand and introduce myself. And he didn't know my name and didn't know many other guys' names that he played with for a number of years. It's always a joke that goes around. But look, it was obviously more the guys that I got drafted with as well. Like, we connected really quickly, and there was eight of us. So I was in that Glenn Kilpatrick, Ronnie Burns, Jason Snell, Daniel Lowther. I could go on and on. But those were the guys that you kind of really sort of, connect with when you go to a new club and you're training and doing pre-season. And what I don't remember is, going through all the different sessions and actually going home and sleeping most days, because it was just a full-on schedule. But all the guys were fantastic, and it was great to be a part of an era in a football club that has really had sustained success.
I'm always wondering, obviously, for a young footballer, one of the highlights, no doubt, would be running around in front of a big crowd at the MCG. Can you remember the first big match that you played in, and how you sort of felt, I guess, running around the G with a large crowd and obviously the pressure that comes with playing AFL footy?
Yeah, I do. So we played North Melbourne. It was my first game was, 1996. You know what? I can't even remember the round. You could probably potentially tell me if you've got Wikipedia there or Google. But what I do remember, it was a huge game. I mean, North Melbourne and Geelong at the time were fierce rivals. And I remember obviously getting the call up to play, and I think it was fairly late in the week. But again, my parents flew down. I was all excited, really looking forward to just really getting out there. I was super nervous, didn't really sleep much the night before, and then when you run out onto the ground, it's just deafening. And the noise is something that you've just never experienced before, and it definitely takes you a good amount of games to get used to it, to try and block it out. But what I do remember of my first game is that I actually fell through the banner. So as I was running through the banner, I think a Grant Tanner might have in front of me, and I'm a little bit taller than Grant, and where the seam of the banner had cut, I just couldn't get my leg over the top of it. So I'm face planted. Didn't even get a stat for that, Trent. But luckily, got a couple of kicks here and there. But look, in my first year, I got dropped after each game. I think I played four games and got dropped after each one. So I was right on the periphery.
I'd love to see the highlights of that banner run through again. That would be fantastic.
I'll send it to you. I've got it somewhere now. I don't know where it is, and I don't want to see it.
A lot of footy fans will remember you playing forward, especially in that early 2000s. And I reckon 2000 and 2001 was where you kicked majority of your career goals with the Cats. How nice was it to be kicking regular goals? And I reckon you recorded a few nice hauls in amongst those games as well. Essendon may have been a game, and a Collingwood game as well. Does any one of those games really stand out where you sort of started to establish yourself as a forward, I guess?
Yeah, look, leading up into the 2000 year where I did play predominantly forward, I was mainly playing a lot in defence when I was playing in the seniors, but I was playing some games and the majority of the games in the reserves up forward. So, you know, the match committee knew that I could play up forward. So when I did get my opportunity, that's when it did come. So I just tried to make the most of it, and I was really happy to play any position possible, because as a young player, you're just wanting to solidify your position, get in the team, and you're wanting to contribute and hopefully win as many games as you can. So when it came to the opportunity of playing up forward, I mean, I really relished that. I can still remember even in the early days playing alongside Gary Ablett. That was a real highlight. But in that 2000 year where you assume a little bit more seniority in the team, and then happened to kick a few more goals, and I was lucky to kick, you know, some, you know, bags of 6 and 5 against Essendon and Collingwood respectively when you mentioned them. So that for me, I think especially against an Essendon side in that year 2000, it sort of, you know, kick 6 was always a real highlight. And I still remember the game against Collingwood, I kicked 5 and I took one of my biggest marks ever, right? And I thought, gee, that is a ripper. God, I hope I get mark of the week. And then Gary Moorcroft the next day at Marvel takes mark of the year.
Oh, no.
Like an unbelievable mark that he takes. I didn't even get mark of the week. Got nothing. So, you know, it's a pretty harsh kind of a way to understand the ups and downs of AFL footy. But them's the breaks, as they say. So, yes, mate. Some fond memories, though. Fond memories of, both of those years. Because, after that, I transitioned and got traded to Melbourne after 2001.
I remember that game against Collingwood. I was there at I reckon it was at Marvel, and that big hanger you took. I can remember that, and I obviously had that in my notes to mention. And you've done it beautifully, mate. It was an absolute ripping mark. And I know when I put this together, we'll get the audio of that mark after you speak about it. So it was a ripper, that's for sure.
You got to make sure that you edit it pretty quickly, because I actually give a handball off. I saw Matty Scarlett coming towards me, so I give a handball off to Matty, and then I kind of thought, what am I doing? Because I think I was maybe about 45 out. I could make the distance. And then he gave it to Ronnie Burns, and then he actually kicks a goal. So it ends up being a good story at the end.
But Gary Hocking, he doesn't use him, pumps it long instead. Look at Clint Bizzle! This is what he does better than most things in the game.
One of the other highlights I remember, an individual one, and this game was against North Melbourne. It was really close, and there was that 70-metre barrel that you kicked at Marvel, or I guess back then in Colonial Stadium. And had you kicked the goal, it would have evened up scores, and it would have been a draw at full time. Like, the siren literally went after the ball went through the point post. You know, I look back at that highlight last night, I'm thinking, gee, that was a huge kick. And did you sort of have an understanding that it was only seconds away until that siren was going to be blown, or...?
Yeah, like you don't know exactly how much time's left. That would make things kind of interesting if there was a shot clock like in basketball. But I did not know how much time was left at all. And all I remember is even in that last quarter, just running and running and running as much as I could. And luckily, I got into a position where I think it was Chase Mooney. I think maybe took a mark, handballed it to me. And I just could kind of remember, even in the sort of the weeks sort of leading up, that I was, you know, hitting these kind of really good talks at training. I was feeling good. And so, you know what, I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to have a crack. So I let it go. And it was one of those kicks that actually you didn't quite feel come off your foot, because it just hit really well. Kept going. But something that often comes up quite regularly when people, talk about some of my time at Geelong. So, yeah, the famous point. So thanks for bringing that up again,
Trent. Oh, sorry, mate. It was heartbreaking for supporters. I chucked in Clint Bizzle in YouTube, and that was the first thing that came up, and I wanted to watch it again. I was actually not worrying about the result. I just admired the barrel. It was sensational.
No, just kidding, mate. No, it is. It's out of everything that I've done, it's probably I've got the most hits that I've ever got on Google or YouTube is the point that I've kicked. So, no, it's too funny. Like I said, mate, some of these things that happen in footy, you get remembered for, many different reasons.
There's very little time here. Scholl takes them on. Mooney.
They had a chance to sew it up, the Kangaroos, and they've let them back. He's gone the tour.
Bizzle.
In the last 5 seconds of a game, he's kicked a torpedo from a good 5 metres inside the square that fairly flew through.
It's like a basketball match with one man from one end to the other.
It would have been a draw.
Well, what a finale to a terrific match, wasn't it?
One last Geelong question before I talk about your time at the D's.
Yeah.
A headline that made, Melbourne papers and so forth in your time that may have been a little bit overblown, I reckon maybe in your eyes, was Gary Hocking's remark about you having Ablett-like qualities. How did you react to that after that was said? And did that add any extra pressure to you with your football when you're sort of being labelled next to, one of the greatest footballers ever?
Oh, look, at the, when it happened, and it was after Buddha was injured and we were playing Carlton at Princess Park, and I had played a game, I think for the majority of the game, I think I played on Aaron Hamill. And look, I had a really, really good game. I played in defence, which ironically, that's quite weird for Buddha to kind of, say those sort of remarks. But look, when I caught up with Buddha, not long after he'd sort of mentioned that, maybe in the days after, we were able to kind of clear it up really quickly. It was just the media that really, really took most of his comments and ran with it, as they usually do. So for me, it was all about the context in which he was talking about and making reference to similarities between myself and Gary. So one of them being, we got to the football club at an older age. As I said, I was 19, turning 20 when I first got there, and Gary was older as well, because of his time at Hawthorn. Again, we both like to take a high mark. And so, there's some similarity there. And there's some other things. I think he said, we can kick on both sides of our feet. And at that stage, I hadn't even played up forward. So it was kind of like that happened in 99. Then I go up forward and I start kicking some goals. So then all of a sudden, this story starts to sort of gain legs. So for me, and to answer your question, it didn't add any extra pressure because the context with which I viewed it from was a comment from Buddha, and I was humbled. I was humbled that he made some similar references, and I never took it as anything else, that I was going to be the next Gary Ablett. It's often quite a bit of a bit of fun that tends to come around every sort of so often when certain players are similar to others. So I get called by some of the journalists. I'm in the newspaper, and it's like, oh, here we go again. Have a chat and the like. So no, it didn't really have an impact for me personally.
It was one of those big big comments that I guess, as you said, overblown by the media. That's for sure. At the end of 2001, Biz, you were traded to the Melbourne Demons. How did that occur, mate? Was that something that was your side? Were the Cats wanting they could get perhaps to add to their list? Were Melbourne seeking you out? How did that all occur?
I'm not quite sure. Like, so from my point of view, going into the end of 2001, I still believe it was maybe 1 year into a 3-year contract. So for me, I was firmly entrenched and thought that I would be at Geelong for at least the next couple of years. So what tends to happen is, I suppose rumours start circling, things might appear in the paper. But you don't quite pay attention to them until your manager rings you or you get called in by the football club. And then I got called into the football club and had a chat to Mark Thompson, and he sort of we had a couple of meetings. I think the first one, it really wasn't a great meeting. He wasn't able to, I think, put across his point on what was happening, and then we had to kind of meet later. So you're just wanting some real direct answers at that stage, because for me, I could really see how Geelong were building under Mark as coach, and I wanted to hang around. And then, look, before you know it, you've got one club not wanting you there, or certain individuals, potentially not wanting you there, and other clubs that do. So, the human condition sort of wants to, I suppose, drift towards, wanting to go where people think you can play, or you're wanting to belong. So for me, I went up the highway, had a meeting with Neil Danaher, and surprisingly, I saw my name up in the forward line at that stage. After the trade happened, which was, it was quite a, I think, an intricate kind of a draft. It was a lot of people moving around. I think Jeff Farmer was involved in that particular trade, but there was quite a few that had to happen for that to go through. And the next thing you know, you're training at Melbourne, and then and finding yourself playing in defence. Which is, again, you're just happy to contribute. But luckily for me, I kind of found myself in defence a lot easier. But because I played most of my football as a centreman, so I sort of reading the play, kick behind the play kind of style. So for me, it actually suited me quite well. But it was a really crappy experience to kind of, to go through it, not feel wanted, kind of pushed out, and then you just try and, make the best of a really bad situation and go to a club that wants you and hopefully pardon the pun, but try and kick some goals.
And you did that too, mate. I reckon your form in the back line was really good. You had a few injuries during your time at the D's, but I reckon you really had a great time at Melbourne when you're on the field, and you set yourself as a really nice defender that did the job each week, and obviously you had some high finishes in the best and fairest as well.
Yeah, look, it was, when you go to a football club, I think when I was 25, on reflection, you know what it takes to play the game. And so there's a lot more discipline, a lot more honest with yourself and also others around, and you've established yourself within the competition. So, that sort of confidence is really high. And then to take it and play a role, which for me, I think really suited me, that sort of third tall defender who tries to, try and come off and help out. So for me, I think it's just the way in which it worked was great, and we really had a fantastic time playing pretty much in finals every second year. A little bit inconsistent, didn't really get to the big dance or anything like that. But again, another 6 years at Melbourne, and I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. I've still got really great relationships and see a lot of the guys regularly, since I do live in Melbourne here, and a close association with Neil, and actually just been on the Fight MND drive through Victoria. So there's a lot of really look back on my time at Melbourne as something I'm really proud of.
Mitch Hahn could be the unlikely hero. He's going to go all the way here. 48 metres out on the left foot. Smother was an absolute cracker from Bizzle. He's got a broken hand, that bloke. And he put his head over the ball and smothered it. And Melbourne get a free kick. And the members say, about time.
That is fantastic football. Mitch Hahn was heading to goal. Now the Demons have opened it up on the north side. Robinson.
Talk about heroics, Brian. Broken hand. Throw yourself onto a big boot like that.
Walsh.
Over the top to Will.
Over the top, here goes Will, and an opportunity to score. He set it up for Neitz. Neitz throws pretty out of the way and marks it in the goal square. This to put the Demons three straight goals in front.
Now turn around and get yourself over to the bloke. I was going to say, look at that. Go and get over to him, Clint Bizzle. That is the thing that wins your games of footy.
Especially when you've got an injury as he has.
on the hand. He's got a broken metacarpal, as Doc said earlier on, and to put your body on the line like that shows a lot of courage and a lot of commitment to the team.
This is Neitz's seventh bag of goals this season, five or more in a game, and today he's kicked seven.
At the end of my podcast, Beers, I ask a few quick handball questions, and I've got a couple that I want to throw your way. So the first one I'm going to ask you, I'm going to give you five names. I'm going to give you one coach, two Cats and two Demons players. I'd love you to share a word or a short phrase to describe them. So we'll stick with the Cats first. Obviously, that was where you started your career. The first one I'm going to run with is Ronnie Burns.
Electric.
Glenn Kilpatrick.
Oysters. Oysters. That was just salt of the earth. Salt of the earth. Ripping guy. Great teammate. I gave him a bit more than Ronnie, didn't I? I mean, let me just go back and say to Ronnie, electric. Great to play with, just excitement machine. And again, really great. Yeah, great teammate.
Let's go to the D's. Brad Green.
Silky smooth skills, underrated for his toughness, and a great finisher. He'd be able to snag one from anywhere.
And Adam Uzay was the other one I wanted to ask you about the D's.
Oh, two left footers, really good to lead to. Ooze, probably one of the best kicks in the game, or even be up there with, that I've played with. And just magical. He could just, he could do a lot of things that many others couldn't. Just reliable, skillful, talented.
We could spend an hour talking about Neil Danaher, and I know you've got a close affiliation with Neil, but just in a short, couple of words, Danaher as a coach, tough, but no doubt would have been great to play under.
Yeah, he was awesome, Trent, to say the least. He was a tough coach. He was fair. He respected you as a player, and really got the best out of you. And, he's just a resilient individual, and he had this masterful way in telling stories. So he was really able to rally, the guys, especially at Melbourne, when we, that we played under him. It was always that us first them kind of story that would start earlier in the week, and he always had, a great story to share. And, that's something that most of us really remember, about him the most, and continue to remember about him the most, especially in his fight with MND. And now more people get to see, the real Neil Danaher, and I'm really fortunate to help and be part of the Fight MND army, and I suppose do my little bit to help find a cure for MND. It's a big beast to slay, but I can tell you, when we do slay it, it's going to be a great day.
Absolutely. He's an amazing individual, Neil Danaher. You just got to admire him. Every time you see him on the TV or in the newspaper, you look at him with admiration. It's a great Australian, that's for sure. Who is the best character you play with, Biz? And I guess when I'm talking character, someone you can have a bit of banter with, a cheeky beer, maybe get into a little bit of strife without making any headlines.
Yeah, look, the name that comes to mind straight away was Brad Scholl.
I'm going to tell you a common theme in this podcast with all you Geelong guys. I've had Paul Brown, I've had Derek Hall, I've had Jason Snell, and now I've got Clint Bizzle, and even Brenton Sanderson mentioned Scholey as well.
Right, there you go. Look, Scholey, he's just he's a great human being too. I always talk about Scholey being one of the funniest men without knowing that he's funny, because he's just really great to be around. He's one of those guys that makes you laugh. And these are the kind of guys that you remember, when you're going through the rigors of training and playing and flying into state and all that. Like, he just lightens the mood, and he's an absolute joy to be around, and he brings people together. So that's probably why, I mean, for me anyway, affectionately saying Scholey. But, he's a lovable rascal. And actually, I've got to, that sort of reminds me, I've got to reach out and catch up with him soon.
I love it. And the last one, mate, post-football, you did a bit of acting in a few different shows on Australian TV. What's harder, acting on Neighbours or playing AFL footy?
Oh, mate, acting for sure. Acting for sure. It was while I was doing my that stint on Neighbours. So, look, for me, just to give some context, there was something that I'd always really enjoyed, say, speech and drama at school. It was an area that, you know, I found that I could really sort of, you know, express, myself, and a real outlet to the rigors of what sport was at a junior age, and then also, you know, footy when I got a bit older. So for me, it was a lot of fun. But I still remember the stint that I did on Neighbours because our daughter at the time was only about 6 months, and my partner was travelling overseas, and I had to do a lot of these scenes, and I was learning my lines at late at night, and then, you know, trying to repeat them in the morning, and there was a lot of takes. Let's just say there was a lot of takes in a few particular scenes, but it was thoroughly enjoyable. But I'd take the footy any day. It's much easier than trying to perform in front of people, and especially in a camera.
Clint Bizzle, been an absolute pleasure to reflect on your footy journey. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us on the 90s Club Footy Podcast.
You're welcome, Trent, and all the best, mate. And thanks for the chats. Brought up some wonderful memories of my time down at the Cattery. I just wanted to say, mate, love my time down there. Lots of really good people, not only in the football club but also outside of football club. So thanks again for the chat.
Got the ball wide. It was Milburn, actually, to Houlihan. Houlihan's kick. Oh, spectacular mark. Wonderful mark by Bizzle. You know all about him, Doug.
Yeah, he can certainly kick the ball too, brother.
That's the end of episode number 46. If you've missed any previous episodes, you can catch them all on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and iHeartRadio. We're on all the social media platforms, so drop us a line on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter on any particular episode you've enjoyed or a guest you would love to hear. Next week, we catch up with three-time Premiership player, Mel Michael.
It's tough, it's rugged, it's good, solid AFL football.